Hello and welcome back, everybody. Happy New Year to a new episode of Apis. I am your host, Brandon Minnick, and with me, as always, is PJ Metz. PJ, how is your week? How is your break? We're recording this just after the December holidays. How you been, buddy?
It is January 4th, and I'm feeling great. Can I say your audio sounds real good, and these are not new headphones, but it sounds crisp. I don't know what you did, if you just maybe just your voice is great today. You got a real radio voice today, and I've got a real radio face today, y'all. I'm glad if you're listening to the podcast, I'm glad. But if you're watching on the live stream, I apologize for all of this. I'm doing great. It's January 4th. Officially are beyond like the 3 days. Like, you can't say Happy New Year to anyone anymore. 3 days is fine. Fourth day, we're good.
I felt weird on the second when people were telling me Happy New Year's. We went on a hike. We took our dog out. Oh, big news. We finally bought a car. We haven't. Yeah. Clap that up. We haven't owned a car in 6 years. And 5 years of that was living in San Francisco, where you really don't need one. There's plenty of public transit. And if you're living in the city, you can get around most places just fine. We moved to Napa about a year ago and still didn't have a car for a year, which was a little harder, but still doable. We kind of formed our life around this 1 to 3 mile bubble around our house. So like my doctor, our grocery store, it's all walking. But we got a new car over the break, so we were able to take the dog out to a couple towns over and go on a hike. And while we were out there, a couple of folks who were passing on the trails were like, Happy New Year. And I was just like, hello.
Hi. I will say the New Year's important in Korea. I lived in Korea for a little bit. New Year's important in Korea because everyone turns a year older January 1st. Korean age is a little bit different. One when you're born, as the next year comes along, you're 2 years old. So everyone born in the same year is the same age. So New Year comes and you say like Happy New Year. I would say it for like a month after. It was my like go-to greeting in Korean. I'd be like, Sehebok mane baraseo, which means like Happy New Year. And like, I would drop that as I was like leaving stores. I'd say it to my boss. And it was, I might've been wrong in Korea for doing it that way. But listen, I'm a giant white looking dude. Like, I'm gonna mess up some stuff. I'm real sorry. But like, New Year. It's great. You got a new car. I got a bike and a Nintendo Switch. Not Christmas gifts. I bought those for myself. My wife was like, what am I going to get you for Christmas? I was like, just give me a hug and say that the Switch was from you. It's okay.
Don't worry. I'm on it.
It's all good. It's all good. Oh, man. Brandon, tell us. What's happening today? Like, today's a pretty good day. What's happening with us here in 8-Bits? I'm noticing a new logo on top of you.
Yeah, new year, new look. You'll probably notice we have a new intro song. In full honesty, that's because our last one kept getting us demonetized. Even though we had the copyright for it. YouTube was like, nope, you don't. We got some new intro outro music, and we're also switching to a new schedule. So you can still follow us live. We're still going to record these live at the same time. But the biggest difference is we are going to scale back a little bit, mostly help with PJ and my sanity, where we were live streaming at the same time every Tuesday, every week. What we're going to do now is release our episodes twice a month. So subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to the YouTube channel. You'll still be notified. You'll still see them pop up, but they'll appear twice a month instead of once every week. And our live streams will still be available. So you can still come chat and hang out with us as well. But we decided that it's probably better if we can record a couple of these, maybe build up a buffer. Some of you know, I was in Europe for 3 weeks last year, towards the end of last year, and we had to record episodes. So I was live streaming from, I was in Prague, and then I was in Oslo. And Oslo, who knows what the hotel Wi-Fi is going to be like? Little things like that, that kind of throw a wrench into, hey, let's do this every week live at the same time. So we're still gonna film it live. But we're going to actually build up some backlogs of episodes. So if, if we go on a trip.
Real professional-like. Like, it'll be like, oh, we don't have to worry about getting a substitute host or a guest host because we've just got an episode to release. We're good.
Right? It's like all the behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, yeah. So for those of you who don't know, our episode a couple weeks ago where I was in Prague sounded like I was on the moon in terms of audio delays. And so our next episode, where I was still going to be out of town, it's like we went through all the effort of queuing up a guest co-host, Dr. G, who was on the show a couple weeks ago, graciously volunteered. And, you know, we were testing out the hotel Wi-Fi after I landed at 10 p.m. And it was a lot. So
it was too much, honestly.
But probably most importantly, PJ's got a new soundboard.
Ooh, boy. This is all. Here's why I'm excited. So I have a Stream Deck. It's a series of buttons, and like it's on a short cord, so I can't pull it up to the camera right now. But I had set up all these soundboards before, all these buttons. I was so excited, and I could never find out how to get my Mac to share sound through what we're using, which is Restream. I could never make it work, but like now. I got it working, and I'm so excited. Chloe's going to be happy about that one. Chloe will be real happy about that one. That's a RuPaul sound. But yeah, the soundboard's really exciting, and we have to have a soundboard because it's way more exciting to bring in a guest with a good sound. Way more exciting.
Speaking of which, we have a pretty cool guest this week. Our guest this week is somebody who I actually met pretty recently, but he's now, and I was thinking about this, I don't know what the term is for if you are both open source maintainers on an open source project. I was thinking, do I address Sean as a coworker, as a co-open source maintainer?
A co-maintainer?
But that being said, we have... awesome guest who does a ton in open source. He's got his own consulting company. He's got apps in the App Store. He's got beautiful websites. So without further ado, Sean Lawrence, welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. I was worried what the sound was going to be.
Wow. A million times better. I love it.
I'm dying.
Yeah, that's right. Morning host. Radio DJs, eat your heart.
That's right. Welcome to K93X, the zoo.
Oh, Sean, thank you so much for joining this week. For those who don't know you, who are you and what do you do?
Thank you very much for having me along. So I am a software engineer. I've been around for 1.5 decades now in terms of actual development. I've only recently started to understand the value of the community and open source, and actually, well, maybe that's not strictly true. I've been a consumer of open source more than actually providing value back. And more recent events have actually driven me to wanting to be able to give back. And I guess that's how things have come about. And obviously, as you mentioned, I'm now helping out on the Xamarin and the Maui community toolkits to be able to keep those up. On top of that, I primarily work with Xamarin-based apps or development, and we recently shipped an app to the App Store. We built a game with the Xamarin Forms, being able to try and see how we could push the tech.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and we'll talk about Super Word Search later in the show. Absolutely, it is an amazing app that I encourage everybody to go check out, but. Sean, I'd like to start by going way back. Just part of 8Bits, we like having people on the show who work in tech, not necessarily to talk about tech, but talk about the person behind the tech. And so what we'd love to start with is, let's go way back. How'd you get started? Did you pick up coding as a kid? When did this come around, and how did you end up falling in love with it?
I guess the point when I actually fell in love would have probably been our GCSEs here. So that would be 15, 16. That's when I got some actual exposure in terms of some technology and being able to put some input into a computer and see what that would then translate into. Prior to that, I actually wanted to be a chef, which is quite a different approach. but having done work experience in that kind of field, it was a much more grueling in terms of the reward you get out of it. still enjoy the cooking part as a hobby, but the exposure I got at school, and then that then drove me to choose what I wanted to move on to later on.
That's awesome. Gotcha. I can't imagine two more disparate fields. Like, I want to be a chef and now developer. That's very, I mean, now similar in like a metaphorical sense. Like, it's real easy to talk about building apps and building dishes. And I'm sure there's a great metaphor in there somewhere that a skilled writer could bring out. But unfortunately, I'm not a skilled writer. So, but that's pretty cool. So did you like hold on to that chef dream for a while? You're like, oh, I do computer stuff and this is fine, but I really can't wait to open my own restaurant. Or did you kind of immediately turn and just go full in on developing and code?
I mean, it was probably growing up, my grandparents ran a bakery, so I spent a lot of time there, and I think that was probably part of the inspiration. And then ultimately, as I started to learn who I was and the person I wanted to become, that's when I guess I got the exposure to other things, and that became IT or ICT in what we were learning, and that felt like the right fit for me. Still enjoy, I mean, like you say, the cooking side, or you've got a level of getting some exposure to the creativity side, but then there's also quite a methodical approach to some parts of it. Quite a lot of it is repetition. Mm-hmm. So some of it is quite a good fit. I can't think of a very good metaphor, but hopefully someone will.
That's two of us. Brandon, it's time for you to see if you can do the metaphor.
Yeah, I was thinking about that too. And, you know, There's a lot of planning involved in cooking, and same with writing software, or at least there should be. I mean, sometimes
there should be lots of planning. There should be planning.
Sometimes you wing it and you can get away with it. But yeah, I think that that level of preparation is very similar. And like you were saying a minute ago, where it's a lot of repetition. And that's what I found when I first started coding. When I first got into open source, one of my goals was I want to have an open source contribution every day, so that when you go on GitHub and you see those little green tiles about tracking your contributions, whether it's writing code, reviewing code, opening up issues, I wanted to have at least a green dot every day, whether it was my open source project or somebody else's open source project. And that is probably one of the biggest things that's helped me, because when you're in it every day, everything becomes a lot more familiar, a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And with coding in general, you see the same things a lot. You know, we were talking about removing 8-bits to 2 episodes a month, and was chatting with PJ before the show. PJ built a Twitter bot so we can tweet out when the episodes go live, since we're not going to publish them live now. And he's like, it'll be great. It'll tweet the 15th and the 30th. And I was like, but what happens in February? It's because there's only 28 or 29 days on a leap year. And that was just purely because I've made that mistake before. And so that experience, that repetition, seeing things before that you can apply elsewhere, very, very similar I gotta assume, because gotta be similar in the field of cooking.
You definitely can't be a master chef until you've made the same dish several times. Making one successful dish does not mean you've mastered it at all. Trust me, I ruined a steak the other day, and I've made steak tons of times in my life. Ruined it. Ruined it. I've got this technique I found online. It's reverse searing. You don't sear it first. Yeah. You sear it after. Right. I was like, yes, this is perfect. It looked gorgeous. And I stuck a thermometer in it, and it was like, this steak is 70 degrees inside Fahrenheit. And I was like, no, wait, how did I do this? How did I mess this up? It was very upsetting.
And for the listeners at home, don't eat meat that's only 70 degrees Fahrenheit.
Listen, no, 140 degrees is rare. So, like, I was halfway to where I needed to get.
So, welcome back to the 8 Bits Cooking Show.
That's right. How's your mise en scène today?
So, Sean, you mentioned you got into coding around 15, 16 years of age. And I know, I mean, I grew up in the States, if you couldn't tell by my accent. And I didn't have any programming classes in high school. Like, I personally didn't write my first line of code until I got to college. And it was like, I want to study computers. And finally got to study them. So I'm curious, how does that work in the UK, or maybe specific to your school? Do they have programs that teach that to 15, 16 year olds?
Now I don't know. I would hope that opportunities are coming more frequently. So hopefully there would be more exposure there. I wouldn't say I necessarily got that much exposure to it. I think we were using Acorn machines at the moment, so there was fairly limited amounts of things that you could do. I think one of the things was just performing mail merging across. So you'd take a set of data and stick it into a load of documents to send out. But at the same time, the college that I was at, they recently invested in actual Windows PCs, and it was actually starting to use those. I think there was some kind of text-based games that they kind of give you a bit of exposure to kind of get to grips with some of that kind of tech. And then in terms, I don't think there was necessarily any explicit coding practices. That certainly came probably more towards A-levels, which you hear that's 16, 17, 18.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I've always felt that everybody should, like, you know, you don't have to become a developer or programmer, but everybody should at least write some code just to understand how it works, because the world we live in, everything's online, everything's on the internet, web pages, mobile apps, you name it. Computers run our lives, run the world. And it's still surprising to me just how some people react when, say, a website doesn't load properly or the internet isn't working. And I'm just like, how did you think that works? 'Cause when I watch them try to, like, debug Wi-Fi, for example, I'm like, do you know what's going on here? And that's so common in all of our lives. And, you know, I'm not saying, like, we all need to be at the level of being able to program our own software or create our own routers. But yeah, just knowing how, say, internet traffic works will be really helpful for when the Wi-Fi goes down.
There's a general just wanting to know how something works, so then you can actually know how to maybe solve problems.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I have that talk to my wife all the time, because I'm listening. So I'm always just like, aren't you curious how that works? Or like, I'll fix something. And she's like, how'd you know how to do that? I was like, oh, well, I looked at it and I was like, well, this part connects to this part and it looks like this gear moved that. And so I just took a guess.
I don't know. I still think everything runs like Nintendo's. So I pull cords out and just blow on them and plug them back in. And
how does that work with the Wi-Fi though?
You pick up the Wi-Fi. This is great. So there's these little slots underneath the Wi-Fi, and a lot of people think it's for displacing heat. No, that's where you blow. You just go across it, and it's perfect. It works every time. It doesn't work. Don't do that. This is bad advice. I'm leaning into my role as a goober and like a nerd, and like I'm the goofy guy on this podcast. So that's my advice. Did you try unplugging the Wi-Fi and blowing on it? That's right, Rex. Wi-Fi works better when there's a breeze. It blows the signal closer to you.
Oh man. So take, continue us on your journey, Sean. You mentioned picking up coding. We would call it high school in the U.S. Around 15, 16. Then what? Did you go off to college?
Yes. So I went to college, studied computing, electronics and physics, all kind of interrelated. And surprisingly, computing was the thing I was worst at in terms of grades, but the thing that I enjoyed the most. So that's kind of where I set my heart on, and ultimately took that across to university.
That's great. It's interesting that physics was included there. And I think that when you look at a lot of... About what year was this, Sean?
If you don't mind us asking.
2002 or 2001 to 2003.
Okay, so that's very much like that's pre-Web 2.0. That's pre-social media, right? So this is like... It's not the early days of the internet, but like... That's around the time when I remember in my house, when we would go out and look at electronics, you would see computers with stickers on it that said "Internet always on," and it was like a brand new thing that the internet was permanently connected. You didn't have to dial up anymore. So it's not quite the early days, but it's also not quite the ubiquitous area of our lives that it is now. And even just by 2005, I think Facebook was in every college, preparing to be for every person if they wanted it. So it makes sense that computing would have been sort of like connected to these other sort of majors and these other focuses. So physics, computing, it sort of makes sense that those went together. Would you take us out of college now? Like you studied college, you're studying computers. What gets you into the field after that?
In terms of actually getting to a job, you mean?
Yeah, like, or what happened in college that really drives your interest? Because you said computers was the thing that interested you most, even though you said those were your worst grades.
Yes. Okay. So it was actually, I mean, I think at that time I got some exposure to as a level of Java, and then when we got to actually writing an assignment as part of the final year, we were give kind of free rein on what we wanted to do. So at the time I tried to focus on, again, mentioned on the baking business, try and write something that could help someone. And it's that the kind of the reward that you get to see that you can actually build something and it actually helps others. That was where I felt I could probably make the biggest amount of difference.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, you've said that before too, that a lot of times it's, when you realize that you can create something that has some kind of benefit, that's what tends to be the hook that keeps people in programming and coding.
Yeah. And it's funny. I think I started out more selfish than anything else. It was one of those things like, oh, wait, I wish this always existed and I know how to do it. And so I'm going to make it. And you know, if other people want to use it, great. But let's be honest, I'm making this for me because I wish it existed. But yeah, and that for at least for me, it snowballed into, oh wow, like people are using this, or people are depending on this, or other people are jumping in and contributing to this. And then it becomes more than just about yourself, becomes more than just about the code. Like Sean was saying earlier, it becomes this community. And I think that's really what hooked me into open source was it is definitely made me a better developer because I get to do stuff, play around with like all the latest goodies. Like I just made my first source generator in C#. And for those of you who've never heard of that, which even if you're a C# developer, you've probably never heard of it because it's pretty new. It's hard. That was one of the hardest things I've done in a long time.
That's where it becomes more rewarding, though, isn't it? When you
it was amazing. Like, I talked my wife's ear off because she was the only one in the room, and I got finished with that. And I was like, I am really proud of this. And she's like, okay, now, honey, that's nice. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I just wrote code that writes code. Not many people have ever done this before. And she's like, okay, that's... I was like, no, you don't understand.
Is this not just the AI that the one guy from Silicon Valley created? Did you not just make Anton and Son of Anton, basically?
No, it's not that smart.
Okay, yeah, okay, pretty good.
I guess I should introduce him. So source generators are kind of a new thing in C# where You could always write code that executes while your app's running by kind of doing what I would call introspection. We call it reflection in C#, where you just kind of, you can look around at the code that's running and then kind of tweak it, edit it, add some things. But that's really slow. Slow in terms of computing time. So the CPU takes a lot of cycles to do that. It's really not recommended. Like, you should avoid reflection as a C# developer. So they came out with this thing, these things called source generators, which as you write the code, or as somebody who consumes your library writes their code, this will execute in the background. So instead of doing it at runtime, where, you know, if you're running a mobile app, phones still aren't as powerful. They're getting pretty close as laptops. And you don't want to slow your app down. So why not? Let's generate this code as we're writing it. Then that code will just compile. It'll run as if the user wrote it. And so you get some benefits out of it. And it's really starting to take off. But man, it's a weird way of thinking, because you have to basically walk through code that you don't know what's there or what exists, and then also write code and handle all these different use cases. But hopefully we got it working. I've got a pull request open on the .NET MAUI community toolkit right now that I'm hoping gets approved and merged. It works on my machine. Let's
there we go. And that's the cardinal rule, isn't it? That's amazing. I had trouble writing our Twitter bot, so you know, some things are way complicated for you and some things are way complicated for me, but I did get the Twitter bot working this morning. You're welcome, world.
Nice.
Pretty soon the AKIS Twitter account will tweet all on its own.
Well, and different levels of challenges, right? Like, we have an email address for the show, hello@8bits.tv. So if you want, you can reach out. If you want to join the show or sponsor the show, you can reach us at hello@8bits. But what that also means is PJ and I see all the emails that come in, and I kept seeing emails from Twitter to PJ as he's working on this Twitter bot. Cause they're like, we don't really trust that you're making a good bot. And he's like,
which is amazing. Like, I had a bot reply to one of my, I made like a tweet about Texas and it replied with some non sequitur about politics. And I was like, get out of here, bot. Like, what are you doing? You're clearly like not a real human. And meanwhile, Twitter's like, so what are you going to use our API for? I was like, Twitter, I'm not the problem here. Come on. They're like four back and forths on those emails. It made me crazy. But anyway, yeah. We got it working.
all sorts of crazy challenges. So Sean, you mentioned this app you're working on. Tell us more about this.
The word search
super word search.
Now this app itself was actually dreamed up many years ago. We'd originally built it, I can't remember fully how many years ago, but the code was in Objective-C, just tried to target against iOS. Gone about it much earlier in my career and kind of made a mess of it and got to the point where kind of life got in the way and we never actually got to the point of completion. And then obviously we're in the mess of this pandemic, so sat at home, we've decided, well, we're going to be in front of our computer screen, why don't we try and do something, see if we can achieve something. So we started, I think, in February last year, and took on the, originally we opened the Objective-C code and see if we couldn't even compile that. Xcode was having a bit of a meltdown in terms of all of the errors it was reporting, rather the digging. That we thought we'd go for a fresh start. So we said, well, let's see if we can achieve the more complex parts that we struggled with to start with, push that across, tried it in Xamarin. And that's kind of started my journey in terms of actually really realizing actually how much value there was within, certainly within the Xamarin community. To the point that I think, I mean, we ended up building the app in maybe 5 months from prototype to being on the store. No end of great numbers in terms of how much code we've actually written in terms of platform specific. I think there's always this advert, you can share as much code as you possibly can. I think we've got 98% in terms of shared code.
Mm-hmm. That's between iOS and Android?
Yes. So I think there's only 100 lines on each of the platforms that we had to write. And that's mostly to get around slight odd bits of behavior rather than actually writing specific stuff. Awesome. Yeah. and that's all down to the community. I mean, you look at like the number of packages that are out there that have achieved things for us. Being able to render really fancy animations smoothly, so there's Lottian in terms of that, through to all of the kind of the custom rendering, which would be Skia. And mm-hmm. like I say, obviously there's effort involved in terms of piecing them together, but the amount of functionality that was there really was impressive.
It's always good. Always good. Here it is, Super Word Search. And if you're listening on the podcast, we're looking at the website. Brandon was talking about it before the show, and he was like, this is really slick, and I agree. Gorgeous looking website. And what I like is the information down here, under right here, the acknowledgments of the open source libraries and what you're using, which I think is really cool to have present on your website.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, we're using them, so we have to give a shout out to them in terms of licensing anyway, but it really is.
Look, we have to.
But to the point, I mean, when we start to look at this, my first contribution to an open source project that wasn't my own was, I believe, the Xamarin Community Toolkit. There was a tiny little feature that I added in. But having such a pleasant experience with the people that maintained it, a year later, I'm now helping to maintain it. It shows that, how friendly a lot of the people are. There's been plenty of discussions in terms of, you look at the Log4j incident a few months ago, or a few weeks ago, the amount of demand that's put on maintainers out there, it just felt right to have to be able to give back. And to try and continue giving back to be able to support everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'll say as a fellow maintainer of Xamarin Community Toolkit and now the .NET MAUI Community Toolkit, I know I found, for me personally, as an open source maintainer, Sean, like you were saying, there could be a lot of demand put on you. But something I've learned and something I'm trying to build in now that we have this new repo for the .NET MAUI Community Toolkit is setting those expectations. These two open source projects, they're very much community driven. We just kind of we hold the reins, but we're not necessarily the ones writing all the code and trying to get that. Get that across in a way that's not like, because you can sound like a real jerk if you're just like, hey, everybody out there, write code for me.
Hey, I need you guys to take care of this. I've got a problem and I need you to fix it. And then I'm going to say it's my toolkit. Yeah, exactly. That's not what's happening though.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. Yeah, if you look at the contributors, the maintainers are also the top contributors. Which is also how you can become a top or become a maintainer. If you contribute enough, then we're like, hey, we just have you join the team. Yeah. But setting those expectations, setting process flows. I know a battle we were always fighting in the Xamarin Community Toolkit. And I saw the same thing on, pretty much every open source library, but specifically Xamarin, Xamarin Forms, is folks would almost treat it like a wish list, like open up an issue that's not necessarily, maybe there is a bug, but saying something like, hey, there's a bug, fix it. And as a maintainer, just like, what's the bug? how do I fix a bug? I don't know it exists. I don't know how you hit it. You know, obviously we didn't code the bugs on purpose. So you got to tell us.
They found bug number 7. You got to get rid of it now.
And so, yeah, with the .NET MAUI Community Toolkit, that's been one of my focuses is we've set up this process, this workflow using the tools that are available to us in GitHub. So things like let's have a discussion about this first. Like, let's have basically an open forum, talk about the feature you want. Or when you go to report a bug, we have issues and templates. And I know Sean's been really instrumental in that, because these templates basically define what you have to tell us, like what we need to know. Sean, I'm curious, when you're working on these, let's say, open source templates, processes in general, like what's kind of your focus to make sure that you don't get overwhelmed by the community, or you don't get, I would say, low effort? Because honestly, anybody who reports a bug is going out of their way to let you know. They didn't have to do that, so thank you to them. But also on the side of the maintainers, we need a little help too. So yeah, Sean, I'm curious, how do you balance that in your repos, your apps, or just your life as a consumer of open source libraries?
So, in terms of an open source project that I've run for a few years, it's kind of ticked over steadily. So actually, there's not been too much demand in terms of that. And anyone that's been involved, I think, there's always this fine balance, isn't there, between asking too much of someone that they're not going to bother reporting it. They'll just go off and maybe find something else. And then also getting enough information out to people. So I try to put enough down that I might get enough information, and usually try to structure it that the bits that you care about most are at the start. So even if they get bored towards the end, you can work around that, as long as you've got some of the key details. There's always that challenge as to whether you're going to get enough information, because I suffer from the same problem at points when we try to explain something. We know what we're talking about because the context is in our head, and it's learning that process of actually trying to translate that across to someone else, or even yourself, if you're going to write it down with enough detail that you can come back a year later and understand what's going on.
Ooh. A year, a week.
Oh, sorry, a week, yes. Christmas has been a good lesson on that one. I don't have a quick, hard, and fast answer in terms of exactly what to do, but there's always got to be an element of always staying friendly to each other. We are helping each other ultimately. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, there are levels of templates, but again, like I say, is as long as they're as easy to use as possible, because other mm-hmm. times you've got things where you have to delete a load of bits or work out where to put them in. And I mean, I think sites like GitHub have made quite a few improvements now where you can actually structure things much more cleanly. So you can actually ask for key bits of data, and the user doesn't have to wade through loads of text in order to work out where to insert the bits of detail that they need to.
I like it. And that fine line of, you know, like Brandon said, it's not just here's the bug, you guys need to fix it. But what you want from people is to say, hey, I noticed that this bug led me to these lines, and I got to be honest, this is where I think it's happening, but I've hit a wall. And then it allows for discussion afterward. And that's the beauty of GitHub and GitLab as well, not to toot my own work's horn, but there's a sense of collaboration that's necessary in order to fix these problems. And you need to be ready for that collaboration. An open source maintainer who's standoffish and unfriendly or overly protective is going to drive people away. And then they're going to be like, well, why don't I have anyone contributing? It's like, well, maybe check how you're addressing people. But you also don't want to be walked on either as a maintainer. You don't want people just complaining at you all the time, because it's really easy to say, oh, it's open source, it's free. And you're going to have tons of people who are just using it, not contributing, not helping. And that's fine, because that's why you put it out there. But using it for free and then complaining and not offering the help is antithetical to the sort of open source community ideals, really.
Yeah. And there's that balance as well, where that last part that you mentioned then starts to feed the maintainers having a bad experience, and then
you're losing maintainers now.
Yeah. And, you know, I was talking earlier about being selfish, selfishly. When I hit a bug in a library and either it doesn't work the way I expected it to, or worse, like everything's just crashing and there's no errors or anything helpful, I want that fixed. And that was something I kind of learned early on, was when I report bugs that I can't figure out how to fix because I don't know the code well enough, but I really need the maintainers to fix, make those bug reports as helpful, as detailed as possible. My go-to now is I'll always make a reproduction. So I'll spin up a little open source repo that has just the little bits of code that are causing the problems, or at least is narrowed down as far as I think I can. And so I can just be like, hey, go to this repo, run the app, click this button, you'll see it happen. And that's something I found is super helpful to get these bugs fixed, because if it's, hey, every time you click this button, the app's going to crash and it looks like the error is here, but I'm not sure how to fix it, then that gives the maintainer something to run with. And you can be selfish to get that bug that you need fixed, instead of having to necessarily understand all of the code and fix it yourself, because that's a whole nother day job in itself, as learning somebody else's repo, their architecture, their syntax styles.
But
it's something I found.
There's a level of not being selfish there, though, isn't there? Because you are going to levels of making someone's life easier. I know there's still the demand of you can't fix it, so you're asking someone else to fix it. But you are still providing some level of effort, as much effort as you can. Because like you're saying, you can't understand the part of the problem.
Yeah, and I've opened bugs and, heck, created these reproduction samples where the sample reproduced it, but I was just way off. Like, the code that I thought was the problem was not the problem. It was something over here, and was just so glad that I didn't try to fix the code. If I'd opened a pull request, it probably would have worked, but that wasn't the root cause. And, it just would have been a little Band-Aid on top.
Always got to be careful about, like, do you know enough to do the PR, you know? Do you not know enough? And really knowing where you're at with the code base is really important. We're going to take a quick little break, guys. We're going to have some ad time here. 1 second. We'll be back in just a little bit. Hi, if you're hearing my voice, that means you've been listening to or watching 8-Bits with Brandon and PJ. And we're here to talk to you about your product and how it can help you in your life by do whatever your product does. So if you're an avid listener of the show or you watch us on Twitch, then you'll know that your product is right for you. I'm so glad I remembered not to wear the same shirt that I wear in that ad. And I gotta admit, my teeth look white as heck in that ad. I need to check what settings I have on that. Guys, if you want to be advertised here on 8-Bits for our dozens of listeners, and in the future, surely thousands of listeners and people who partake in us, all you have to do is send us an email at hello@8bits.tv, and we'd be happy to talk to you about promotional consideration. Heck, if you just want to send us some free stuff, Mountain Dew, I'm looking at you, as I have been for the past 220 days on Twitter. If you just want to send us stuff and have us talk about it, just email us. This is capitalism, baby. We're here for it.
I'm laughing now, so.
There's no way to segue out of that, is there? Capitalism, baby.
As to say, we should get a super word search, maybe. Be the first.
Listen.
Sponsor. No.
If the price is right, it's $7. Give us $7 and we will mention you on the
air.
One more time, hello@8bits.tv. Email us. We look forward to hearing from y'all. Let's bring it back. What's next? A natural flow of conversation surely comes off of that intrusive ad break.
Absolutely. And something we haven't talked about yet, Sean, we love getting to know the people behind the tech, but you know, we've been talking about and sharing our experience with open source because we love helping the community. And something else that's big in helping the community is helping people just get into tech. And I know we've chatted about this before, but what is your advice for somebody who maybe is looking around and going, well, I'd love to do this, but I don't know where to start?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm actually going through this process at the moment with a couple of people. I mean, it varies ultimately depending on exactly what you're trying to do, but we typically come back to quite a few common concepts, and maybe open source is a good way to start. Ultimately, it's getting exposure to something. If you know that you want to start programming, then maybe we can start to focus on what it is that you want to achieve. For example, a mentee I've got at the moment, I mean, he's been given some fairly specific requirements that he wants to do some Xamarin-based work in terms of potentially trying to get a job. So trying to focus on maybe setting some key goals and how you'd actually go about achieving what it is that you want to do. But then we always get back to these fundamentals of never being afraid to ask questions. It's always good to try and it's always good. Actually, there's a quote from my daughter's book that I was going to mention because she's read it to us the other day. Asking for help is not giving up. It's refusing to give up.
Yes. Yes. Oh my gosh. I told you I was going to find a natural place for that reggae horn, guys. That idea and that concept of there's so many people who believe that admitting that you need help with something means that you are admitting that you're incapable of doing it. When no one is an island unto themselves, even when you are thinking about someone who works in a house, did all the coding themselves, made this app, did no one help them? At some point in their life, there was someone who provided something that gave them the environment in which to be able to do that. Literally, like, no one is building their own house or sourcing their own lumber or building their own concrete, or like, you don't do every single step. So in small things, when we're talking about, I don't know where to go next, the mere act of asking means you're looking to move forward. And that's one of the best quotes I've ever heard. Look for it in my next talk. That's so good. Thank you, Sean. What book is that from? Your daughter wrote a book?
Oh, wow. No, copy the quote. The Boy, the Mole, the Fox, and the Horse.
Yes. I love it. It's fantastic.
Terrible lighting. Yes, I mean, like you say, you're acknowledging that you don't understand something, and you want to know the answer, but you don't have the answer, and it's trying to get to the bottom of it. That might be Google. That might be someone that you're working with. I mean, I was very fortunate. I know my first role is that I asked lots of questions because I wanted to be able to do a good job, and there was lots I didn't know. I was fresh out of uni, so I was just very lucky in order to be able to have the people that were willing to answer my question and not tell me to shut up.
Listen, everyone out there that's got junior developers on their team that knows people right out of college, right out of boot camp, right out of being self-taught, community taught, whatever it is, those people are usually very eager to get into wherever they are. It's rare that someone gets hired at a company, starts at a temp job, starts working with open source, like shows up and says, hey, I've got this pull request, this merge request, and I was wondering if this would work. If they're doing that, that means they're looking to do more. And so fostering that and creating an environment where they feel comfortable doing that is what makes them level up and get better. And then they can turn around and bring even more people with them and make it better for others. So it's absolutely a willingness to ask questions and a willingness on the answer giver to provide the right context to help is amazing. Brandon said that I built this Twitter bot for 8-bits, but he really laid out exactly what I needed to do in order to pull the information we needed for the Twitter bot. So yeah, I went and wrote the code, but he pointed me in exactly the right, and literally, I think, even like said, hey, here's a Stack Overflow answer that I think helps. So he was pointing me in the right direction because I am newer at this. I have been doing this for less than a year at this point. So it's important to, one, if you're new, like you said, Sean, be willing to ask questions. Two, if you're old, well, if you're experienced, be willing to give those answers and guide people in the right direction.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I'll say, you know, somebody on the other side of that, when a junior developer joins the team or joins a community, we have expectations around what you know and what you don't know. So you don't have to pretend like you know everything, because when somebody comes out of university or somebody comes out of a boot camp, enough of us have worked with folks with that background, with that experience, or maybe done that ourselves, where we know what they teach you and also what they don't. And so it's okay. If you knock our socks off and you know everything, truly, that's amazing. Great for you. But yeah, whenever I'm chatting with somebody who they just got their first job, it's like, okay, well, have you heard of this? You know, I'll always start with like, oh, we should talk about that. Have you ever heard of this? Whereas if somebody's been working as a developer for 10, 20 years, then we can probably assume there's some more knowledge there. You can skip those intro level concepts. But yeah, you know, there's nothing to be ashamed of. You know, I look back at what I learned in university, and gosh, I mean, the amount I apply every day of what I got a degree in computer hardware engineering, super, super small. Like the day-to-day stuff, just like writing open source code and yeah, working with communities. Like that's not taught in university. At least it wasn't taught in my classes. So yeah, ask us questions. We're here to help. But speaking of that, Sean, it sounds like you're helping this person try to get their new job. So what is that advice you give them to kind of get into a new tech job?
So, I mean, having the chat's basically what we've had. Typically, the people asking for help, typically they know that what they're looking for. So they know they want to learn. It's always a case of working out what it is that they want to focus on. Maybe there might be areas they feel weaker in terms of what, if they go to an interview to have these to go through whatever line of questioning in order to get a role. I always try to reinforce again, like I said, is the not being afraid to ask questions. But then again, in terms of interviews, there's never a case of if someone says, "Have you heard of this?" Like you just mentioned. If you haven't, it's much better to admit, understand your limitations, because others are there. They're not there to poke you too much and actually make you feel like you don't know things. I know interviews they're always quite a nerve-wracking experience, but people are there to kind of judge you as a judge. That's a bad word.
they're trying to understand you.
Understand, yes. Understand your willingness to be part of a team. And how you could grow in terms of in the company, not how you're going to fit in and just magically fix everything. Typically it's usually a case of being able to accept what it is that you know and what you don't know, and then understand how we can then move forward to getting to what you know. Then the concept of maybe trying to focus on how we learn things comes in, and that becomes a much bigger philosophical.
I'd argue most jobs are more interested in how well you can do with learning a new concept than you are with what you already know, because every single job is going to be giving you something you've never done before. I have friends who were mechanical engineers, aerospace engineers, I mean, teachers, dance instructors, theater majors. Every single person that goes through college will tell you their first job out of college, if it's related to their major, was very different from what they learned in the classroom. Not a single career out there that involves a degree is going to be the same as what you learned in the classroom. There's so much to learn, and every job wants to know that you're willing to learn, and you're only willing to learn if you can admit what you do and don't know at first.
Yeah. And then there's also the level of when you don't know so much, trying to focus all of the effort on learning all of it, you're just going to become overwhelmed as well. So actually trying to just focus on some key details and then slowly grow, I know maybe feels a bit more frustrating in terms of your progress, because there is so much to try and pick up. But if you can start to piece it together in smaller chunks, it becomes much easier to digest.
Mm-hmm.
And not overworking, because obviously the more tired we get, we end up learning less or becoming far less efficient.
Oh, yeah. You got to take those breaks.
I love that advice, Sean, because I know when I was trying to first land my first job out of college, I was doing the opposite of what you just advised. I was trying to just pretend like I knew everything, pretend like I had learned everything. So for example, I would just go down job boards and be like, oh, they want somebody who knows Python. And then I would go learn how to do a hello world in Python and be like, yep, I know Python now. And looking back on that, that's such a bad idea, because had they actually hired me, I would have not only had to learn how to do the job and do the roles, but I'd also have to learn Python. And then I'd be in that position. It's like, well, I kind of lied on my resume and said I knew Python. So I got to keep that up now.
So when you said Python, when I was 12, I had a pet snake, and that's what I meant. I'm sorry.
Thank you so much for that advice. Yeah. Don't feel like you have to learn everything. Learn one thing and then build on top of that. I love that advice. Sean, we only have a minute left, and it's been such a good time having you on the show. We'd love to have you back if you're available for another session. But for the folks out there who want to stay in touch with you, where can they find you on the internet?
So I guess the best place would be Twitter. My username is confusing, at Bidgington, BIJINGTON. So I'm going to say it myself. But thank you very much for having me. It has been a pleasure to be on.
And again, thanks so much for joining us, Sean. And for you listening out there, thank you. Please do subscribe, leave us a comment, let us know what you think. We love having you join us, and we love growing this community together with you. But with that being said, we'll see you at the next episode, which will air later this month.